Emotional sensitivity is a hallmark of neurodivergence. We're far more likely to experience intense emotions, react sharply to rejection, and struggle with regulation. This feeds into both relationships and business. Over-delivery is often both a necessity for stimulation and a response to internalized perfectionism and people-pleasing. Today's guest, Dr. Dante Assad Williams, is a psychologist, adjunct professor, entrepreneur, and social media influencer who believes that neurodivergent women, whom he calls neurobaddies, bring unique strengths to both relationships and entrepreneurship, and that those strengths are directly tied to our multiple sensitivities. Like so many of my favorite guests, you and I have already been having way too much fun, and I'm already filled with regret that I didn't push record sooner. But let's bring the listeners into this conversation that we've been sharing. I found you a few months ago on TikTok, was immediately smitten with everything that you had to say about how you appreciate neurodivergent women. You call them neurobaddies. And as a psychologist, they're not only clients, they're friends, they've been lovers, and you really have an exquisite appreciation for women who are neurodivergent. So let's talk about the origin story of neurobaddies.
Yeah, appreciate that. So like most ADHD things, right? I'm sitting in my car about to walk into the grocery store and I had this random thought. I was reflecting. I'm like, you know, some of the best relationships I have ever been in were neurodiverse women. And then I started naming like characteristics in my mind. Like they were so honest. Like I knew exactly what they were thinking. There was no guessing games. And for me as a neurodiverse like man with ADHD, like I miss social cues. I miss all of that, right? Sometimes. Yes. So to have someone that's honest and forthright like that, hyper-focused and hyper-fixated on things that I like and be interested in that, it was just such a cool thing. So I'm like, let me record this video really quick. So it's like a 10-second video clip. I pull it up. I'm like, you know what? Neurodiverse women are the best. I call them neuro baddies. And the way that it works is that oftentimes men look at women for their appearance first and primary, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But the reason I call it neuro baddies is the neuro part is the most attractive part first. All of the things that make someone unique. The second piece, then we acknowledge the physical beauty. But again, like putting onus on the fact of like being neurodiverse is attractive and they make the best partners. I post this video online. It went like semi-viral. From that point, it's just been growing ever since. But I'm just glad that random ADHD thought has been so helpful to many people.
Well, something that I really, really appreciate about you, Dr. Dante, is that you trust yourself.
Yeah.
You trust your intuition, you trust your instincts, and you're willing to try things and make mistakes. And I think that because we're both entrepreneurial individuals with ADHD traits, both mental health background, I think learning how to reconnect with our ability to trust ourselves is probably the healing journey that most neurodivergent women need most of all. Because this is something we talked about earlier. You know, we grow up as kids and we know we're different.
Yeah.
We may not be able to put our finger on it, but we know we're different. Like you say, we miss social cues. We have a hard time sitting still. We might blurt things out. We might be much more eager than other kids. We have a harder time falling asleep, all the different reasons. And usually in childhood, we get a lot of negative feedback from well-meaning people about those traits that we really can't help. So we internalize a lot of negative thoughts about ourselves, and those things just tend to accumulate over time. Yeah. Now somebody's 25, 35, 55 years old, they're scrolling TikTok, and here you are saying, I think neurobaddies are the finest women out there. They are the most trustworthy. They're the most honest. You know, they mean what they say. They say what they mean. They have no pretense. And they're thinking, who the hell is this guy? Is he trying to manipulate me? Is he trying to con me? What kind of game is this motherfucker running here? Like, you know, has anybody questioned? Have you ever given me that in the comments? Because I'm pretty sure that was one of the first videos of yours that I saw was that very video. And I didn't know that was when you first did what I call name it and claim it. Like it was literally just a thought and you decided to share it, but you trusted yourself to share it.
I have gotten some comments and like messages from people. Like, I don't think this person is genuinely saying what he's meaning, because how could it be me when I've experienced such negative messaging towards me from past partners and past people in my life?
Yeah.
Few, if any, man has told me that outside of the physical piece, all the traits about who I am was not viewed as good. In fact, it was viewed as very negative. So then it's like, don't tell me something good and then, you know, bait and switch me. You know.
Right. And also, to your point, I think I've gotten tons of negative feedback over my lifetime. I've accomplished a lot of things. I've been successful. I'm high functioning, but I've gotten a lot of negative feedback. And I would say 90% of the time, it is directed towards my neurodivergent traits. And those traits have been called obnoxious. Those traits have been called annoying. I've been accused of being self-absorbed. Well, what do we call self-absorbed? It is hyper-focus.
Yeah.
When you are so focused on something that your partner walks in the room and says, hey, can you do, pick up some milk on the way home? And you're like, yeah, I got it. Because you just want them to go away because you're in your hyper-focus. That conversation never happened.
Exactly.
So there ain't no milk coming home with you. And then they think, that bitch doesn't listen to me. She is only thinking about her damn self. And you're so hurt and confused, because if you even remember the conversation and then you say, well, how about if we, could you just put it on a notepad or could you put it on the whiteboard? And why do you have to be so difficult?
Mm.
So I think that is the experience of most neurodivergent women, is the very traits that are related to our neurodivergence that we get negative feedback about. So you come along and you're like, as a matter of fact, I find those traits to be the most delightful. I find those traits to be value adds and preferences. I can imagine why some women would think you're trying to con them or you're trying to get them to lower their guard so that you can, bam, I fooled you, you know?
Yep. I think there's a reluctancy to finally have hope that there's possibility that there are people and men that will see them that way. It seems still like a dream and still so far-fetched. And so why believe in a dream? So you fight against it. It's not about, like I've noticed, is like same thing with like therapy. When that counter-transference happens, it has nothing to do with me really, but it's what in this moment that person is externalizing onto me as the conduit.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And so if they feel like that, my way I respond back to that is not through like anger or frustration. It's more like a curiosity of like, hey, I appreciate you just saying that. And two, like, can you tell me more about why you feel and think like that, if you wouldn't mind? And maybe I could be wrong in my messaging, so I'm open to hearing that. But most times it's not necessarily that. It's like the unresolved things that has happened to them that's now showing up when they finally hear messaging that they've always wanted to hear from a stranger online.
You're absolutely right. And I think you're bringing up a point that is something I hear all the time with my clients, and certainly think about myself, is that because we're more emotional, our emotions can be triggered more easily and we can get high, we can get low, we might stay there longer than we like to. I'd like to say our emotions are more buoyant. Mm-hmm. Other people who are being less charitable would say we're more easily dysregulated. You know, we have rejection sensitivity issues and so forth. But I notice, I think this is what you're speaking to, how often we will hold ourselves back from something that is appealing to us because we don't want to be disappointed, because we take that so hard.
Yeah. We try our best in everything.
Yeah.
And when it's not enough, oof.
Yes. And I'll tell you, it's funny that you're saying that, because you know that I work with entrepreneurs, and let's say somebody has got a job and they're building their business on the side. And so I'm telling them, you need to dial down on the fact that you over-deliver at your job so you can conserve some of your energy, you can conserve some of your capacity so that you actually have something at the end of the day and maybe on a weekend to devote to your business. Yeah. And you know what they tell me, I'm sure you can guess, I can't do that. I refer to it as being full ass or no ass. We can't half ass anything. If we're in it, if we care enough to show up, we're going to do it to the best of our ability. And that's going to be over deliver. And I think it's not just because we tend to think we're constantly doing relationship management. We're constantly trying to prove ourselves.
Yeah.
But also we need a lot of stimulation.
Yep.
So we over-deliver because we need the stimulation that goes with over-delivering, not only because we may also be perfectionists and people pleasers. That's part of it. But we need the stimulation that comes from over-delivering. So this idea that I'm not going to be all in wherever I am so I can save something for later, that's a hard sell for somebody who felt like us.
Yeah. I think they have to realize is that long-term though, right, for them to optimally be in the environment that they know is conducive for them. And also too, like exploitation is bound to happen with that type of dynamic, right?
Yeah.
Because we're seeking that fix, that dopamine fix, and we're seeking this new interest and we like taking on additional things because the thing that we hate, like I prefer to be overworked than bored.
Yes.
Boredom is the worst.
No, I always say I treat boredom like a life-threatening condition. Like I will do anything to avoid low boredom threshold, low boredom tolerance. I will blow shit up just to avoid being bored. And I didn't realize that about myself for so many years. I thought I was just reckless and self-sabotaging. But I realized, no, I really cannot tolerate boredom.
Yeah.
I cannot.
I think like for that particular person that has a hard time letting the concept of like all or nothing in work kind of shift that dynamic in how they're seeing themselves and that place of employment, there's a reason that they're wanting to leave to begin with. So that's part one, right? We don't give our best to things that aren't deserving of our best. But if you're doing something for yourself, i.e. your business, then you want to do that best. But if you're tired and exhausted by the time you get to the end of the day, you're actually not even giving best effort in both spaces. You're just telling yourself you are because you're exhausted.
True. So, and you end up having very little at the end of the day. So you give your best at work and maybe you don't even like the place. Maybe you're 1 foot out the door and the other on a banana peel, but you are using yourself up there. Who gets the leftovers, if there even are any? The people that matter most, your friends and family.
Exactly.
They get the leftovers, if there is even anything left over.
Exactly. So the job that you don't like.
Yes. Yeah. Now, you are a very smart young man, and you are very self-aware, and you have wholeheartedly embraced your neurodivergence, but you didn't grow up knowing that you had ADHD. What were you told as a little boy? Because you knew you were different, but what did you make of that? What did you make it mean? And how did you figure it all out?
Yeah, I think I viewed it as I was like lazy or unmotivated or maybe not like smart enough. Like the way I learn is different. Mm. But I think also too, like in the 90s and like early 2000s, like at least, you know, my area and my reality and world, ADHD wasn't a thing. That was only for the really, really, really naughty kids at school, right?
You want to be one of them.
You know what? My mom, she'll show up at school. So misbehavior was nothing that. You know, you figure out body regulation strategies as a kid to sit still so you're not having those types of experiences. But I'm both hyperactive and inattentive at times.
Yes.
So I got the cocktail, the dual cocktail.
Honestly, I think we make the best entrepreneurs, the combined. I clocked you as combined type. The first video I saw of yours on TikTok, I'm like, yeah, he's combined. Because you got to have enough hyperactivity and impulsivity to have a propensity to act.
Mm-hmm.
Can't sit and think and think and think and overthink and research and second guess and ruminate and analysis paralysis. You need to move. You need to act. So what that means is you are going to make decisions more quickly and you're going to act on those decisions more quickly. And at least half of them aren't going to work out. So you're going to become resilient and fail your way to success. I think we are much better off with combined type than strictly hyperactive impulsive, because those are the naughty kids. Those are the kids who get in all kinds of trouble because they literally cannot keep their motherfucking hands to themselves. But the overthinkers, second guessers, perfectionists, procrastinators, the ones who are so in their heads, they don't have any physical hyperactivity at all. Yeah. I think they struggle the most because they can't get out of their heads to take action that might work out. And I think you've seen this mostly with women too. Don't most of the women that you've connected with have more the inattentive, distractible type?
Correct. Yeah. And they end up staying kind of stuck and dormant, even in relationship as well.
Say more about that.
So they could know that they're in a bad relationship with someone, right? They pick the patterns up probably right away, but hope is one of the best tools that women have, but it's one of the worst tools that will work against them if they give hope to something that doesn't deserve it.
Truth.
So they have this hope that my partner, with my support,
yes,
can become what I need them to be. So then what ends up happening, though, is there's this like kind of pre-contemplative state of like, do I leave? Do I stay? So they end up in that pre-contemplation. What you're really saying is, I'm going to stay. And then you stay way too long.
Oh, I haven't heard it said that way before. So when you are thinking your way through that, mm-hmm. do I stay or do I go? You think that you're making a decision. You think that you're making progress towards a decision. Mm-hmm. But what you're saying is that that's a decision to stay. How is that so from a neuropsychiatric or neuropsychological perspective? What's going on in the brain?
I think what's happening is that it's a self-soothing strategy to make them feel like they're regaining control. Like you're wrestling with that in yourself, thinking through it within yourself. But the problem is that abusive person still has the same level of access to you as he did 3 months ago before you even had that thought. The access level has never changed. You haven't done anything.
Yep.
But you self-soothed yourself to think and rationalize your way through it. Like, I know I don't deserve this. I should do this and this. You formulated a plan of departure.
Yes.
But they've never done the plan of departure. Months have gone by.
Maybe years.
Right. And for the narcissist person, they benefit off of that because they're, again, controlling the narrative and controlling the access part. So like okay. Just thinking about leaving doesn't lead to leaving.
I am very rarely rendered speechless. And you, my friend, just delivered the goods. I did not know if we were going to bring up the topic of narcissism in this conversation because there are so many directions we could go. And I know that that is an area of interest and experience that you and I both share. And I think let's go ahead and go there because I think I know that we both share the belief and the observation that narcissistic personalities, toxic personalities, manipulative, controlling, abusive personalities tend to infiltrate and insinuate themselves into the lives of neurodivergent women with great regularity. Mm-hmm. And there's a unique combination of traits that neurodivergent women have that I think make them, I don't think women, neurodivergent women attract narcissistic personalities because that makes them responsible for their own suffering. I think narcissistic personalities are attracted to the traits and qualities that neurodivergent women have. And then once the woman is ensnared in that kind of, you know, like you're in the spider web, it's hard for you to get out. Let's unpack that from your perspective.
Yeah, it's a predatory type of behavior. Because the narcissist, the whole classical foundation of it is a deep sense of self-hatred.
Yes.
So they have to constantly seek out sources of validation. So for the hyper-focused, neurodiverse woman who is coming into an interaction with a pure heart, who's excited, dopamine's going, like it's great. And this man is painting this picture out to them, this, that, and the other. It's enticing.
Yeah.
And so to have someone that's paying so much attention and being mindful of you validates the narcissist.
Yeah.
They got the ultimate source of the drug that they need. So they want that person and they need that person. They have to control that person. So the woman that's engaging in this, and I also think too, like, again, the only we do it or we don't do it at all. In many contexts, that could be great. But in relationship, that could also be harmful. There's certain safe fails that people should have in terms of access. Like if you're prone to oversharing as a woman, and you overshare with a narcissist, you're basically giving them the playbook to fuck you over.
So true. And we do have a tendency to overshare, don't we?
Yep.
On the regular, because not all of us are extroverted, but for those of us who are, people are our favorite source of dopamine.
Yeah.
We meet someone, we connect with them, we're excited, we love anything new and shiny. The relationship is nothing but pure potential. We haven't fucked it up yet. We haven't spoiled it. They haven't done anything to piss us off or offend us. So it's pure possibility. And so we're just in the moment. We're getting all kinds of high quality dopamine flowing. And it's like, oh, we start telling them all kinds of things and they're just hanging on our every word. And maybe they're sharing their shit too. And you can form really, really powerful connections quickly. But in the case of a narcissist, this person is not your soulmate. You are literally crafting a trauma bond.
Yep.
When you think you've just met your soulmate.
Yep. Once the hyperfixation is there, it's hard to break away from that.
Yes.
it's difficult. It almost could feel like it's wrong to do that. You know, and again, we're set up. It's a perfect setup, perfect storm, because inattentive or hyperactive presentations of ADHD in women have constantly have to learn and observe everyone else around them. Primarily, they're not considering how am I showing up authentically in this space. They're,
yes.
they're programmed to be like, I have to constantly observe who and what's around me so I'm liked yes. and I can
fit
in.
Who do I need to be for this situation?
Yep. Correct. So then what ends up happening is the narrative of the narcissist now, and that's how they hijack it. They have to hijack narratives. They have to make you think that you're not saying and believing what you're thinking and saying and believing. So because you're already prone to start considering other people and considering the environment, it's literally already the red carpet's laid out for them to do that to them. Again, it's hard to walk away from that. You know, and that's why I started creating content talking about that, because I keep hearing women's perspective of like, I was with a narcissist. I'm like, well, I've had like 50 comments of women say they've been with narcissists. So there's something to that. But we don't talk about like this is the perfect matchup of fuckery to happen.
I agree with you 1,000%, Dante. I think it's been my observation. I've heard from so many clients, first when I was a therapist and later as a coach, the number of women with ADHD who are in some form of a relationship with a narcissist, and sometimes like a series of them, then they start to think, oh, that's my type. And the trap is they blame themselves. Now, I'll tell you, I've had only one non-5-star review on this podcast. I've had one 1-star review, and it was when I released an episode about do women with ADHD attract narcissists? And I interviewed another psychologist who's an expert on narcissistic behavior. Sadly, she's since passed away, but I released that episode and this person heard that and just thought I was absolutely full of shit and gave me a 1-star review. But I'll tell you what, I am not backing down from this because I have seen it. You have seen it. And I think you're 100% right that we have this mindset of ourselves that we can't really trust ourselves. Mm-hmm. We can't really rely on our own perception of things. So when we have this person who's insinuated themselves into our life, and at first they make us think, you know, they're the perfect partner. Mm-hmm. And little by little by little, they dismantle that and they start to devalue us and they start to criticize us and they start to withhold affection and they start to ignore us and neglect us and all that. And we keep thinking, well, I just need to fix myself. I just need to stop being annoying. I need to get back to how I was when he fell in love with me. It's a trap. You can't get back to it because it was never real from the beginning.
Yeah.
But I think we've been primed for that from childhood because of all the ways that we've been told you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
And there's a problem. You have a problem. You have a disorder. You got to fix that shit up. When you first started realizing that you were different and you were years away from getting diagnosed with ADHD, you didn't get diagnosed until your mid-20s in grad school. What did you make it mean that you weren't like other kids?
That
you were lazy, but you're smart.
The thing is, like, I didn't know I was smart because I was comparing myself to neurotypical minded kids. And so when you're comparing yourself to that and you're looking at your test score, like it's hard for me to sit still, let alone take a standardized test. So that impacts, you know, also the fact that like sheer boredom, I'm like, I'm not interested in this standardized test. I don't care. I just want to be done.
So
you don't show up. But then if you ask me to find a topic of interest that's super exciting, well, my eyes light up. I get super just focused in and I can explain everything to you about this topic.
Yep.
And so I think for me, I processed it as if like I was dumb. I processed it as if I was lazy and I processed it as if like I didn't belong.
Yeah.
And so those three components, you know, it wasn't until I got to college and I was a horrible college student at first. Thank God I went to community college and they were gracious enough to let me come back. I was academically on probation and suspended several times.
And here you are in your big ass age of 35 with a motherfucking doctorate.
But it started with like liberating myself from feeling like I had to learn a particular type of way. My only class I got an A in was psychology because I was interested in it. And then I got A in every psychology since then. I gotten some B's in like statistics, but
most
of my classes I was pulling A's, you know? And I was like, whoa, I'm not like, I got an A over that kid over there? I'm like, wait, what? Then I started to kind of view myself a little bit differently then, you know?
But you know what? I think one of the things that's really interesting and fascinating about your story is that even if you thought you were dumb, even if you thought you were lazy, even if you thought that you couldn't do it things the right way, you have a really good, healthy sense of self, Dante. You have a really good core self-esteem. Mm-hmm. So all of those doubts about who you are and what you could do and whether you're okay and whether you're enough and whether you belong and all that. Yeah, I'm not saying that those are not legitimate struggles. I'm not saying you didn't suffer. I know you did. Mm-hmm. But somewhere in your core, you just carried on. You kept trying different things. You just kept living your life and figuring it out. How is that possible? Like,
that's a great question. Yeah, because I'm a person that I'd rather say I tried it and tried it all the way through. And I think I credit that to some of that neurodiversity piece of like, either I'm in it or I'm not in it.
Yeah.
So I'm in it. So I'm like, I might not do it right, but yeah, I'm going to keep going. And so that act of like failing forward, you start to actually learn your rhythm and stride. And then you start to realize that the way that you talk about yourself and the way other people talked about you was inaccurate. You're forced to have to like deal with the incongruent stories that you tell yourself. Cause I'm like, I'm not dumb if I'm getting an A. And then particularly like doing like my therapy work, it's like, oh, I'm not a shitty therapist. I'm a legit therapist. I'm like, I'm legitly good at what I do. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, I didn't know that. So I think there's a part of me that still had this belief in myself just to keep going forward and just to keep moving, despite me not knowing what the outcome might look like. And then you get the outcome and then you're like, oh, wow, like I did this.
Actually, I think the hyperactivity thing helps a little bit too, because if you think about it, if you can't sit still, you're going to be moving.
Exactly.
So if you just keep moving, you probably have a better chance of getting somewhere. And not being able to just sit and stew and fret and worry and feel shitty. It's like, I think this propensity for action probably really helped you. And did you have a person in your young life that really believed you? Because we now understand that ADHD is genetic and you're not ground zero.
Yeah.
So you got it from somebody. So you were raised around at least one somebody who had it. Have you sort of let other people in the family kind of know, and have other people in your family chosen to be diagnosed by following in your example?
Yeah. So I have to credit my cousin. My cousin is a blue collar worker who has his own landscaping lawn care business. Again, entrepreneurial minded. Yeah. He's autism, ADHD, right? Mm-hmm. But one day we were talking, he's like, Dante, I think a lot of us in the family, I think we either have ADHD or autism. Now, this is like his like doctor cousin. I'm like, nah, man, nah, there's no way. Nah, there's no way. And then I start looking at my behavior and I start looking at my son's behavior. And then I'm like, oh, shit. A lot of us are probably undiagnosed.
Yeah.
Either with autism, ADHD, or a combination of both. But we all are very unique people, though. We all... hyper focused and hyper fit. This my cousin in particular, like he can fix and do it. Like he's one of the people who's mechanically inclined, right?
Yes.
My mom's the same way. She's got undiagnosed ADHD. I love you, mom, but she has undiagnosed ADHD. Yeah.
Right? We'll make sure she's listening. We love you, mom.
Yeah, love you, mom.
She should get your five keys to know if you're a neuro baddie. Have you given her that?
Yeah. My mom's like, oh, I am a bat. Yes, you are, mom.
Have you dropped your merch yet? Because I'm waiting to order the freaking t-shirt. Like, you know,
I'm working on it.
We need the t-shirt, you know?
I'm working on it. I'm in the process of just getting the logo and all that stuff going. So just to own like, yeah, y'all are neuro baddies. Like, and there's a community here. Like, it's less about me. I'm just the conduit, I feel like. But it's about the messaging and it's about offering a counter perspective. Instead of this negative piece of like, as a man who I'm uncomfortable saying, but a man who's a conventionally attractive man to say, oh, you're gorgeous because you're a neurodiverse woman.
It is. It kind of breaks your brain a little bit. And you're right. It introduces hopefulness into the conversation. It creates safety. And it's an invitation to a different perspective that starts the process. But fundamentally, you and I both know we have to accept ourselves. Because it comes down to that. You can invite neuro baddies to accept themselves. I invite people to accept themselves. But ultimately, it's an inside job. It's a personal choice. And somebody has to say, you know what? I really like what he has to say. It makes a lot of sense. I do feel better when I think about myself that way. And I think I'm ready to name it and claim it, because in truth, no neurotypical person's ever going to be able to give you permission to do that. And even another neurodivergent person, they can encourage you, they can invite you, they can support you, but you really have to get to the point where you say, you know what? I am different. Yeah. I have a different narrative about that now, and I'm good. I'm good with it.
Yeah.
And then get the t-shirt.
Yeah.
You can let other people know.
Yeah.
And like-minded and like-brained people can find each other.
Yeah. And then it's hard for opposition or like, you know, narcissists or whatever the negative force is coming against you when you're in community and you're resourced together. The wolf comes to get the sheep that's alone. The wolf can't get the entire pack, right? Mm.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking of a whole bunch of stories that could be told like a fairy tale, but for grownups. Because you just, the whole wolf, I'm just picturing like a whole little red baddie hood. You know, they're little red. Hey, listen, I promised I wasn't going to keep you here all day. We already had a whole lot of interesting conversation before we started recording. And I promise I wanted to ask you this question, because even though you are currently working under someone else until you're fully licensed, and you are destined to be on your own in private practice, and you're building a vibrant community on TikTok. I'm going to link to all the ways that people can find you, follow you, connect with you, learn from you. What is the one thing, and I'm probably going to ask you for one, you're going to give me 10 in true ADHD fashion. I'm here for it. What is the one trait that you have, Dr. Dante, that you'd say, yeah, this is an entrepreneurial trait and I have my ADHD to thank for it? What would that be?
Yeah, I think it's my aspect of justice.
Oh, preach.
Yeah, because I mean what I say and I say what I mean. And I deliver on what I said I was going to do, particularly like when it comes to like business. We see a lot of bad models of bad business, and I just can't. There's a part of me, I just can't live with myself. There's a part of me, I just can't do it. There's a part of me, it just doesn't exist within me. I'm not saying I'm perfect, but there's a part of me that I have a large pause before I even think about considering doing an action that could break or breach trust or not following through on something. So I think that justice part, like I'm a person that I am prone to flip a table. I'm a person, if something bad is happening, I will show up. And when I say I'm going to show up, I literally mean I'm going to show up.
You're reminding me, I once flipped a table because I got I got so outraged about, and you're a lot bigger and stronger than I am. I flipped a table because I was outraged, and it was because an issue of fairness triggered me. Justice sensitivity. That's the first time any guest has answered that. And I love that answer. It does make things simpler in many respects, you know?
Yeah. I don't have to lie and keep lying and telling lies.
Yeah.
And if you don't like the fact that I told the truth, and I don't know about you, but like, even if it's uncomfortable, I prefer truth over being lied to.
Same.
Because I start going, well, if you lied to me about this, what the hell else have you lied to me about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely true. And I have too shitty a memory to keep track of the lies. So
exactly.
So to turn this feel good podcast interview into lasting growth, here are some suggestions from Dr. D and me. Embrace the term neurobaddie. Follow Dr. Dante on TikTok and Instagram. There are links in the show notes, and you can grab his free resource, 5 Keys to Know If You're a Neurobaddie. And if you have a business and you want to learn to balance the all or nothing drive to over deliver with the need to conserve energy and prevent burnout, click on the other link in the show notes to book a free consultation with me.